and thank you very much for coming. The challenge that we have in with the division of revenue is that its time frames are very tight. In fact, Parliament is busy amending it because the time frames are really, really tight. In fact, if you could understand the story of the money bill, it's difficult. However, we really appreciate that under those difficult circumstances, you were able to make it at short notice. We're not intending to have a long meeting. We intend to have a short meeting. Our focus is really on health infrastructure. Now it's got the good name, the nice name, health facilities and infrastructure. That's where we are. We will touch on the NHI as well, but we're not intending to have a long meeting, honourable members. I think the issue really is the infrastructure, the capacity of health, whether it's provinces to spend on infrastructure. We have also invited the National Treasury. It's represented by DDG Donald Kling with a team, a very good money. There's Donald Kling. I don't think that we have other visitors, that's all. The DG, just on behalf of the committee, would like to first convey our sincere condolences to you. I know that the other Friday you couldn't make it because of the family bereavement. We hope that all went well. The minister was here last Friday. He did give the background on the expenditure on NHI and the challenges that health is faced with. The purpose of this meeting, just that the meeting was called at short notice, would really have loved to have had the MSCs, the districts themselves, so that together we can say how can we assist with the expenditure. We think that we can, if we're working together. Our slogan is working together. We can do more. We think we can really assist. The minister went at length trying to explain what he has done to try to ensure that there was understanding in the districts of what was expected of them. I'm talking about the pilot sites. He explained to us where you were meeting challenges. I think OR he mentioned. But I think that, as I said, that few words before I come to that. This morning we are experiencing, because of the weather, the traffic is also not well today, not traveling okay this morning. I see some members, we have the apologies, and some members will be, I know that some members should be joining us later. I've received some apologies that the members are running late. But we have to start because it's Friday. We have an understanding that by 12 we should be finished at the latest. At the latest, by 12, but we normally want to finish earlier so that people could travel. DJ, over to you.
Thank you, Chair and Honorable Member. I just wanted to say, Chair, on record, the Minister has expressed concern that the meeting was called not so long ago about NHI, and he would have appreciated if we had one so that as officials we don't have to travel multiple times. He's expressed that he is going to be meeting with you, and he said I must express this officially on record. Chair, I wanted to address the question, what is the level of readiness? And perhaps link it to these two new grants that have been presented to the committee. Chair, we've done at national level extensive work in preparing for this, but we wanted to show you some of the logic to our approach in linking infrastructure to NHI, but also how the infrastructure projects have been delivered and the planning of this infrastructure project. And just looking at the facilities, I'll take, Chair, as an example, Thabo Mofutsanyane. On the screen, Chair, if you look, this is a little bit weak. The green triangles are clinics. And you'll see that the cluster of clinics in Thabo Mofutsanyane, and we've got this for every district in the country, not just NHI pilot sites only. We've done it for every single district, for 52 districts. And we're arguing, Chair, that you see, if you look at Thabo Mofutsanyane alone, for access purposes, there's a definition of access. People have to travel. The WHO definition is that people have to travel 5 kilometers. We think 5 kilometers is a little bit too much. If you are too sick, you can't travel 5 kilometers. We say 2 kilometers is within reason, at least for a clinic. And we say for a community health center, we also have a norm. But we say, now in terms of infrastructure delivery in this country, are we facilitating access or not? I think that's the first question that needs to be answered. Now, if you look at the clinics alone in Thabo Mofutsanyane, look at the clustering. There are a lot of clinics in the Phutha Ditshaba area compared to everywhere else. If you look at your community health center, now the community health center is slightly bigger than your clinic, and at least it has some beds where patients can be observed overnight. Now, if you look at the community health centers, even those, they are very, very scanty. If you look at the district hospitals, there's even a serious access problem. These are the Red Crosses. There are very few of those Red Crosses. Okay? So regional hospitals, it means people have to travel kilometers. Now, this is what I'm trying to paint so that you know. And the norm is that at least the district must have enough facilities. People don't have to travel kilometers. And I'll show you why there are inherent risks with those travel, why people don't make it in life, and some die on their way precisely because of that. So go to the next slide. So Chair, those are the hospitals, as you can see. Do the access. No, the access. The 2 kilometers. So if you check, these are the 2 kilometer travel distances. The small green circles. So that's the kilometer people have to travel. And then the bigger circle is for the community health center. And we can even show you for the hospitals. But here we've gone further to show you. So this is your Putavichaba area. Those are the green clinics that we're showing you. Now you can imagine in those other areas where they are scattered facilities. Now that's your district hospital and that's your regional hospital. Now we are arguing when infrastructure is planned, we must plan it for access purposes and for no other reason. So that's the principle. So what we did, we went back to say, in future, when provinces plan for infrastructure, when they say they want to build a clinic, every HOD will have, they have access to this data. Every HOD must go back here and tell us, why are they building clinics here when there's already access? Because we've defined the norm. And why are they not extending it to where people have limited access? I think that's the first principle, Chair. Can you go out? So, Chair, we went again to look at, in the event that there are no, there's limited access to clinic, there's limited access to hospitals, we'd like to also know what other facilities are there that people can access. And we went to look at private sector facilities, the GPs, as well as the private hospitals. But our interest was more about the GPs. And the reason we did that was because we wanted to see with the contracting model that we're proposing, what did it mean? Chair, as part of NHI, that's why I say I'm linking the two. As part of NHI, we said we're going to do 4 streams of work. The primary healthcare stream, the specialist stream, the ward-based primary healthcare stream, and I'll explain what it is, the district specialist streams, the third is the school health, and the fourth is the GP contracting. So I'd like to show you, firstly, in terms of the primary health care. It's the district specialist, it's primary health care streams, it's the school health, and the GP contracting. So we looked here firstly at the headcounts, meaning per facility. How many people use the facility? And we did what we call polygons and T's so that it can give us the number of encounters because it tells us the utilization rate of a facility. So, for instance, in this area, the people, these are the counts, the number of counts that people would visit this facility. And we are saying the norm here would be about 10,000. So already you've got an extra 2,000. But here it's 19,000. So that already tells you that for this facility there's overutilization. So it means for planning purposes, either we expand this and make it bigger so that there's no overcrowding because it has implications for our staffing. It has implications for attitude of nurses and so on. So we've gone back also to do additional work. We'll not present it today using the WISE and tool. We know exactly what the numbers are of each facility. We'll show you that for planning. And I'm answering the question, the level of planning and readiness. And we're linking that both to the infrastructure and how planning is for infrastructure, because we're also arguing, Chair, that in this area, there must not be another clinic that is built. For the very reason that you showed you, because in other areas, we showed you already that there are no clinics. And why should you still build in these areas? And this is what we're saying. Don't go here again. And when we get plans from provinces, we just get a list that says we're going to build another clinic. So this time around, we're saying, no, there's a serious access problem here, and let's correct it. But we do it together. Meaning we sit together, we plan together, and then we agree on the timeline and the deliveries and the deliverables. So, Chair, for the community-based primary health care, what we are saying for the, from a service point of view, I gave you the number of encounters, and we are saying one of the reasons we have too many people getting to our facilities is because we have not introduced the primary health care approach. So what we did, we said for each ward, you need ward-based outreach teams, meaning these are people who are going to go to our communities, pick up if children have been immunized, pick up if women are attending antenatal clinics, and so on. Now, that approach is going to create a problem, obviously, in the first phase, in that most people are going to be sent to facilities. So it's going to increase those encounters. Remember, I showed you the primary healthcare encounters. Now, as soon as you get people out of their homes to facilities, it increases workload. So at the moment, we're establishing what the workload is relative to the number of staff and the services that are rendered in the catchment of population. So we've got that data. And we are saying we need to increase the staffing based on that. But in anticipation of more people coming, it's going to create a bit of a burden. So we say we need to then contract the GPs and get the GPs to render services and come to our facilities. For two reasons, Chair. When you look at the PHC encounters, our people, and we can do the same with the utilization rates in our hospitals and bed occupancies, you'll realize that in those instances, more people prefer to use hospitals, and we've got data, we can bring it up. Use hospitals, because one, when they go to our facilities, there are no doctors, they want to be seen by a doctor. So we say we'll bring doctors to our clinics, but through GP, contracting and sessional services. So what we have here, Chair, just in Free State alone and in Thabo Mofutsanyane, this is the data relative to these community health workers and ward-based services. So we will have information about that ward, everything. Information about the area, about the ward ID, about the district, what it is. But we also have information about the municipality services, so that we look at the utilization rates of municipality services relative to the provincial services. We also want to then use that as a basis of planning for these people. These are the community health workers. You can see that for the first group, we've got six. So we're going to be increasing this number. And we'll be planning that with the district to say, for this area, you don't have enough, please increase the number. And then as part of the funding that we give the provinces, they need to tell us how they've allocated, because this has not happened in the past. And this is what we'd like to correct. As part of the same, we've got the second stream of work, Chair, and this is about the specialist teams that have been appointed. Remember, Chair, the Minister explained reduce maternal and child mortality. Chair, if you recall, South Africa will be reporting in 2015 on how well we've done with regard to reduction of our mortality rates and ratios. So we've appointed 7 specialists per district: a gynecologist, obstetrician and gynecologist, pediatrician, the anesthetist, a family physician, a specialist nurses, primary health care pediatrics, as well as the advanced midwife. So what we've done also is to see how those specialists will be supporting. Now it's very interesting that as we are appointing, for this area alone, Thabo Mofutsanyane, this is the team. We've got an advanced midwife, we've got a family medicine physician. We could not get an obstetrician and pediatrician. We've been able to get a pediatric nurse and a PhD nurse. So what we are doing with relative to that is that we have to find an obstetrician and pediatrician that we can contract, who can then work with these teams. Because the principle of a contractual model is to bring resources closer to the services so that we can reduce the burden of disease and mortality rates. Go to the GP. Chair, for the GP contracting, we've also looked at exactly where the GPs are in the whole district, meaning for every district, we want to know where the doctors. Remember, this country, if you look at the total number of health professionals, we still have enough, relatively, but the majority are in the private sector. So the question is, once we increase our production, once we do that, because we won't be able to meet those targets immediately, we should be able to contract those in the private sector. And these are where the GPs are located. But what we wanted to do, Che, is to see whether we can move them closer to where access is a problem. As you recall, Che, I said, look at where the clinics are. This is where the cluster of clinics is, and it's an access problem. So we say we'd like to bring them closer. You actually have GPs even in areas where you don't have clinics. Yeah. Now, in this country, the inequities are really, really bad, because it means if you have a medical aid, I'll show you the data of insured and uninsured people in this country. Mm-hmm. If you have a medical aid, you can access these doctors here. Mm-hmm. Now, it means in this country, if you are uninsured, you can't. You can only go here, even if this GP is closer to you. So it's inequities that you should deal with and address. And it's what I was trying to express here, to say, when people say, but, you know, NHI, in other countries, people do access. What you do in a district, you assign people to facilities and you assign people to be seen by GPs as and when they need access. They don't have to travel all the way from here to there. You know, if you are here, then it means you have to travel. And now if I show you those circles, the 2 kilometer radius is that much. But it means the people here will have to travel all the way. It's more than 2 kilometers. It's an access problem. I can show you those polygons. I can show you those rings and circles. You'll see that it's an inequity problem. So we are solving this problem. So this is why I said this is the preparatory work we've done. Go to the next one, please. Let's go. So for now, we've already called these GPs to say, tell us if you are willing to work with us. Now, all these have volunteered. We're still trying to get more of them to see, can you come and help us solve the burden of disease in this country and treat our people who need health services. Go to the schools. Chair, the last stream of work is about school health services. We took the quintile 1 and 2 schools. These are specifically those schools in high poverty areas. So the first thing we said is, if we want to children so that we can report in 2015, but also for our own sake as a country, to show that our life expectancy is improving. We looked at the quintile 1 and 2 schools, Chair, relative to the facilities. So it's quite clear, the blue dot, Chair, is the quintile 1, and the red is the quintile 2. You'll see that we've got quite a lot of schools in South Africa. But for all the children in these schools to access health, can you see relative to the facilities, it's not possible to do that. So we have the mobile clinics. I don't know if the minister presented. Now, those mobile clinics, there are three types of mobile. For dental services, because you know that children at a certain age have dental caries. Now, because of that, it affects their eating habits and they end up with stunted growth and performance and so on. The other is about assessment. Most children, we don't pick up their visual problems when they are young, and we get surprised when they underperform. What we do, we make them sit at the back in the classroom when they actually have eyesight problems. So we pick those up because we have the ophthalmic services that are also part of this program and general assessment of children. So those mobiles will be doing that. So, Chair, as part of the grant, we have used, and I want to mention that most of this work we've actually done using development aid funding. We've done this work using different funds and EU funds. And the question is, and it's a very important question I'd like to raise in this committee, for such important developmental work, Chair, should we really be using donor funding? Or should South Africa be investing for its children? And I think we cannot move this responsibility. It's ours. We should make these investments. And I thought I should show you that we've done this work, Chair. We are buying more mobiles to access these children and to do these assessments using EU money. And we'll buy more of these. We've bought 30. We're going to buy 60 more. And I thought I should also show you this. But Chair, there's one population that is very important. Yes, and the other 60 are going for production. And this is with EU funding. Chair, I wanted to talk about this specific population in informal settlements. And I want to explain to you what is happening in the country. Because we have clusters of informal settlements. We've gone to one particular area, and this is a pilot that we did in the Gauteng province. We looked at what it takes, where those people in that informal settlement access services. They have to pay 18 rands return to access a clinic in Witkopen. So every time they are ill, they have to access a facility in that way. And the question was, would it be possible, because then a church donated what we call a health post. Okay? So that health post has alleviated this out-of-pocket payment. Because when we talk about out-of-pocket payment, people always link it only to out-of-pocket for when people present in a facility. But out-of-pocket is also about travel. Now, in South Africa, the cost of care for people, for our poorer population, is also about paying for transport to access health services. The reason I showed you those polygons and T's was that travel that people have to undertake. Now, we have data about how people access facilities. Do they use a taxi? Do they use a train? Do they use a bus? Or do they walk to facilities? And it's a basis on which we are saying, next time when you erect a facility, it should be on the basis of us alleviating this burden, particularly for our poorer population, and ensuring that they can access services much better. Chair, this is the background. But what we've done, we've also looked at the roads. Now, remember we're saying we have school it was quite revealing, Chair, for us, because we say if you have a mobile just going to travel, remember these circles, I said it's about access. Now for those that have to travel longer periods, it means our ambulances, the roads must be good, and then we check the roads. So these are our proper roads. These are okay. But these are gravel, ne? So here we have here the legend. It shows you that here, it means for your ambulance to move from this clinic, they'll always have to use a gravel road to reach your hospital. And then we have to then plan around the maintenance cost of that ambulance and so on. So this is why we're saying we want the provinces to go back and tell us how they plan for this. But initially, we want to do that planning with them. We want to hold them by hand, Chair. It is for that reason we've done these grants in this manner. Not because we want to keep the money. We say, no, in the past, if you look at how grants were done, they send us plans. Wherever they're going to build, it doesn't matter, so we send the money.
Yeah.
So this time around, we say, no. We hold you by hand. We go together. Let's check, no, but why are you erecting it? There's already a clinic. People can walk 2 kilometers. Let's go next door. There are no services. And here the road, let's go to transport department. We have a problem, ambulances, our ambulances are not, they're not going to be sustained. The services are not going to be sustained for longer because these are the problems. So we've done all of this, Chair. But we've gone further. For every single facility, Chair, for every single facility, we've got data, every single one, about the state of that facility. Chair, the South African health estate is over 300 billion rand, the health estate as a whole. But if you look at, if you were to look at that health estate as a whole, I think Dr. Shaka is not here, he would give me the exact figure. I think it's probably 320 billion. I don't want to guess, but I know it's over 300 billion. Now, this is a huge, huge amount in terms of what is needed. Now, so the question is, when we deal with infrastructure money and we have this more than 300 billion estate, what should we do? Now, our health facility audit tells us that a lot of our facilities are in disrepair in this 300 billion. So the first problem we have is that if we don't fix them, we're going to have to replace them at huge cost. And the estimates that we have is that 30% of that total is what needs to be fixed. And it's a backlog that needs to be addressed. Now, we want to sit with provinces and show them those, and they must tell us that from now onwards on health infrastructure, this is where we're going to focus. The second check is 5% must go to preventative and routine maintenance. We've actually done some work in about 10 districts, and of the 10, Chair, because we've got data for every single facility, it's a broken lift, it's a toilet that does not work for patients, even for health workers, it's a water pipe, ne? That has burst for 3 years and not fixed. So we've asked those questions to say, if we have all these repair problems, how are we allocating for infrastructure? So we're saying to provinces, we hold you by hand, we fix all these things because we know where things are broken, and it's a plan. We draw this plan together, and then we work on the basis of that. So we've already started, and some of the things, Chair, I must confess, in this exercise that we've done with the facility improvement team, some of this did not even need any additional money in provinces. It did not need additional money. We've gone back to say, tell us this ceiling that is tilted like that, you don't need to replace it. You need a screwdriver.
Mm.
And that's it. And they've gone to fix the chair. We've got the before and after stories. We've got the before and after stories. We can share them with you if you have time. We can share them with you. Now, this is one stream of work relative to the NHI pilot. But the second stream of work is about the hospitals, Chair. We've worked in hospitals. The first thing we said, Chair, is that before you even start thinking NHI and the hospital services, because your hospitals are the ones that consume a lot of your budget. They consume a lot of your budget because this is where expensive treatment is provided. And number two, this is where your specialist services are provided. Now, if your primary health care works very well, actually it reduces this cost in your hospital. But you said, let's start by seeing what is happening in these hospitals. Here, one hospital in Gauteng, this is where we started the pilot, has not collected revenue, I don't know for how long. Just because the computer systems were not working. 80% downtime. And then we asked the question, what do your workers who are supposed to work on these computers, what do they do on a daily basis? They come there, they sit, and they go. Okay. So we can, okay, fine. She has said in one province. I'm protecting my colleagues, Chair, because they're not here. Chair, what we did, like I said, we also again used development fund. We started by fixing the computers, but as we're doing that, we'll pick up yet other problems, HR problems. Pay slips are produced, but not collected. You said, no, but is this a South African who doesn't need his or her pay slip? Something is wrong. We went back to say, we took an ID. At least everyone comes with an ID, whether you're a professor or not. You come, we count, we do a head count. And we set up a system, an HR system. We said, okay, your leave. Let's see who goes on leave where. So, Chair, we start with basic systems that are taken for granted. And I'm sorry for saying that.
Mm-hmm.
If you are building a system, start with the very simple things that people take for granted. We saw that HR. But again, we're using development aid for funds. Chair, in that facility, in a period of 5 months, we've collected revenue of 35 million that would otherwise not have been collected.
Mm-hmm.
But we've done something interesting, Chair. The provinces use consulting firm. Because, you see, you don't fix a computer. You don't check whether people come to work or not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you do, you employ a consulting firm to collect revenue on your behalf. So we said, no more consulting firm. You'll do the work yourself. You end this contract. Now, we checked also how much the contract, the consulting firm charges for collection of revenue at 28%. Now, it's 28% that they should not have in the first place. So we have gone to say from now onwards, these are the systems, and this is how it should work. And we are rolling that out. Chair, the one about patients, you see this thing about long queues that our people are subjected to. It's just unbelievable. In one facility, a different facility, we found files that can fill this whole floor. In fact, we have pictures. We can show you the pictures, but we won't reveal the facility or the province. So what happens is that because these files are not kept properly, every time you go as a patient, they have to open a new file. Because they're stacked. So we took, because we've employed interns, we've worked with them, we've trained them, they've sorted all of that. But we what do you call these things that collect rubble? Some of the bins, the rubble bins, about 11 or 12 of them were full of rubbish paper that should not have been there. And we've set up filing system. I mean, this is why I say, Chair, we are going back to basics. But we're also dealing with the technical work in preparation for that. So we're hoping that the hospitals must be able to collect revenue where they should, and they started, and the business systems with them. Now, Treasury gave us money to do DRGs in preparing for NHI. I said to them, this is why I say I don't even want to discuss it here, because DRGs, ICD 10, I said those are nice things. Let's fix the basics that make the systems work, and then in preparation for NHI, we link them, and then people can be helped. And we'll be able to tell what the burden of disease, and in fact, Chair, for every CEO in a hospital, at the moment we are holding them by hand, but we are saying this must be the basis on which their performance is assessed. So, Chair, I can go on and on. Now I can start again another slide on the base facilities and show you exactly what's happening in each facility. The services that are rendered, those provinces where facilities have the services or not, and then the contracting model. So this contracting model will also use donor funding. Everything I've presented was with EU money and DFID money. And Chair, I've got a document I'll give to you. I call it 18 months of NHI. We've documented all what has been done in the 18 months till December. And I can show you, we're not singing a story, it's a real work that has happened. That matters to ordinary people, but also for yourselves, because you are the ones who have to approve the budget. Thank you, Chair. I don't want to be too, and I'll talk forever. I apologize for that. Thank you.
Thank you, TG. So someone is going to comment generally about the other comment that we are expecting from you, TG, is that some of the provinces, you know, especially my province, Gauteng, and their infrastructure spending is very bad. So I'm not sure whether you're saying in the work that you're doing, you're also trying to revamp the system, because their expenditure is really, Gauteng, for instance, at the end of September, it spent 57%, which I think that was the worst case.
Chair, our proposal of this new grant, we want to, this is why we say we want to sit down with them, and this is what we'll be doing in the coming week. We use this data because we are saying they must not go and erect facilities where access is not going to be the basis of planning. So we use access as an entry point for every province that is erecting infrastructure. The second is about the repairs that I referred to earlier, to say that we've got data about every single facility and the state of its repair. And we are saying there's no reason why we cannot fix those things, Chair. It can be done. But now, the model of just sending money and saying to provinces, here, do it, and every time we come here, we say money has been underspent. It cannot be, not with the data that we have about the state of repair of our facilities. You can't have, on an ongoing basis, a report that says something, the lifts have not been fixed for a year. It can't be. It cannot be. So we are saying, let's change this in such a way that we plan together, we deliver together. We hold each other by hand. That's the difference this time around. And Chair, if it doesn't work, I'll say it openly. I don't deserve my salary in this government. opportunity to because we ask the provinces now to say, okay, give us a list of facilities. We've got that list. We're matching it against this. And I would like to use it to say, if the grants were as they are, without any change, I want to see whether it was going to improve the access. I want to see whether it was going to improve access. And Chair would like, and I said it to Scopa 2 days ago. I said, Chair, these tools that you are developing, we're not developing them for any other reason. I would like, it's my humble wish, that these tools can also be tools that you yourself use for oversight work. We've done that even for standards. We say that when you go and do your oversight, you must have these tools, so that when you go to a province, you must then say, okay, this is the status of whatever you've allocated, what difference have you made? So we'd like this to be a basis on which every one of us, every single civil servant who works for this government must be held accountable, including Treasury in determining how allocations are done. All of us, not only health, Treasury. If a Treasury official says money must go this way, they must be asked why. What has been the basis for that? So that they don't, even in a province, provincial treasurer should not be saying money must go there when we already know that these are areas. They must also use this as a basis of allocation. Every one of us, Jay, every one of us must be held accountable so that we can improve the lives of our people. These things that we see here cannot be justified.
I want to open DG, but I'm sure so that we don't have many questions to be left. I'm not sure whether what you're saying, because before your intervention, the provinces asked for these allocations. They are given the allocations. Now, from where we are, we're looking at the expenditure of the provinces. Now, you have given us the scenario of how you're working. I know that you were integrating the NHI with infrastructure. But that is happening at 10 districts or 11 districts. The rest, for instance, there's a less spending. I'm not sure whether you're saying there's less spending because you trying to monitor nationally or closely on what is this money? Are the funds spent on? I'm not sure whether that's what you're saying generally.
No, Chair, I'm saying the basis of planning in the past was not informed. Mm-hmm. Now this is the basis on which now we say when a province says they are going to build a clinic, we say this time around show us access because we've got all of this. That is the first thing, Chair. And I also said to you, Chair, that this work was not just done for the pilot districts. It's for the whole country. Because remember, when infrastructure money is allocated, it's not just for the NHI pilot district. It's for the whole country. So we're doing this for the whole country, not just for NHI. The reason I raised the NHI is because we have 4 streams of work. And I was showing you, relative to those 4 streams of work, how have we planned for that? Because you wanted to know the level of readiness. Chair, we also have, in addition to this, looked at the burden of disease. For instance, what the maternal mortality ratio, the highest burden. Out of 52 districts, Chair, 25 districts in our country have the highest burden. If you recall, the minister launched CAMA, okay, which is the accelerated program to reduce maternal mortality. It's an AU program. We've gone to say, but at maternal mortality ratio of 300,000 live births, how are we going to to meet the target in 2 years' time, because 2015 we have to report. So we set the highest deadline in 25. And what are those things that we must do in the 25 districts? And this is the work that we started. Now, that work, we've already started in Mangaung. Mangaung is not an NHI pilot district. Zululand, for instance, is not NHI pilot district. Sidibeng is not NHI pilot district. I'm saying we're going to work across different districts where the different parts of work, meaning we cannot wait for pilots and not intervene. So we're intervening even beyond the pilots to improve the lives of South Africans. So there are a lot of projects that are underway. And again, an edge. This work that we're doing is with DFID funding to do the ESMO East, to train people and so on. We're doing it with purely with development aid money. I was not saying should we depend. I'm saying there are things that are key to the country's development, for which development aid is facilitatory money. It cannot be core. It's facilitatory. If we do some innovation and we try and test certain things, yes. But the core, to provide school health services, we can't do that using development aid. But to try the model and test, yes. But main services, it cannot be checked. The audit outcomes, let me share the audit outcomes. If you check of in the health sector, they don't look good. Now to improve that, we've actually employed unemployed graduates in finance, HR, and IT, and we've allocated them to different provinces. But that we use development aid money for. And they are there sorting out assets, doing all sorts of things, including this work that we're doing to improve revenue generation, to fix the files and so on. I'm just saying, what you will see when we report, I will put a big slide to say this is how much we spent using funding from development partners. And then how much we spent using our appropriated funds. Because I'm trying to advocate for money to be allocated appropriately. If most of the funds are used for workshops and big meetings, we say let's scale down on that. Let's rather redirect that for services. So that core business, so that we can improve that. I'm just appealing to yourselves that when we report and we say we've spent, we probably look good. Maybe the question is, what did you spend the money on?
Honourable members, there you are. For the colleagues who joined us later, we did convey your apologies. There's a presentation. I don't know if you want to raise some questions or comments. Honorable Fuller.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm impressed by the steps that the department is taking. It's very good. After a long time, you hear someone coming with something that makes sense. Because most of the time, questions are certain issues. So this one is basic, and I love basic things because they are easy to be followed and understood. My only concern is to say, as I can see this today, I heard now your last statement that there's undergraduates that have been taken. Are they going to fill in those posts? Because most of the time we pick up that there's no, you know, you find that money, but post vacancies are not filled in. If that can maybe happen to make sure that those vacancies don't, because that is also one of the areas that is a serious concern in terms of feelings of vacancies in all, whether it's a cleaner, whatever. Most of the time those vacancies, then in some way in the middle of the year, then we shifted. And I agree with you when you say it's all, everybody involved should be held accountable to make sure that things are happening. But what I'd love to say is to say maybe as much as Treasury is involved in this, is to say maybe sometimes it must also be taken on board, because they deal with figures and they think that whatever it is important, so that they can have a clear understanding. Because sometimes we talk past each other and it does become a problem. Now it becomes survival of the fittest to convince the other one better. So maybe that is some of the things. But my question is to say, in terms of the hospital revitalization grant, will it be utilized by the end of this month, or they're still going to continue? It's going to become a roller? Because I can see here only 58% was spent. Thank you.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me just say this right up front, that the presentation, even though I arrived in the middle of it, I was able to follow what was presented, and I think it's the second time we get the presentation, and the delegation is led by the DG. And I always find in those two occasions frankness into a presentation, which is for me a very healthy, can short circuit a long process, and painful process can make it much simpler and easy. That's what I find the presentation the first time. So remember the first time we were discussing the very same issue during the meeting the targets. And there was also frankness about provinces not towing the line. It would be helpful or maybe a good just to hear whether they are now towing the line, whether they had to talk in planning together, dealing with issues together. There was that issue in the first. So I want to say, Chair, that I think it's fairly educating what has been presented on the board and what the so quite good work that has been done. And I think we should take the challenge or the invitation rather that we should have another at some interval engagement with the evidence generated from the work that has been done together with the expenditure patterns that goes with that generated evidence. And I think the second thing I want to say, Chair, is that health is a very important department, because it functions from central to human existence. So I also think that with the work that has been done and shown on the board here, I also think that I must say that I am convinced, and I can see that both the DG and the minister work very hard. And I like the honesty upfront with the problem, because you don't, then you are able to deal with the problem together. And I also find that the minister is also straightforward up front. He doesn't shy away to say the thing as is. So I'm raising all this thing that, Chair, in dealing with the issues that you're asking, there's a basis that there's openness and there's a willingness to share for us to be able to work together on the problem, solving problems. Only just two small questions, probably. There is a little bit of a complaint around the donor funding not doing the core function, not being employed somewhere else where it shouldn't be. But the question was not answered as to why is it so. You know, because surely there should be, in terms of the planning, including the engagement with Treasury, understanding that the allocations, much as there are lots of other grants, but this work, which is the core work, is also important, which South African must shoulder in terms of the payment. So you didn't answer that question as to why is it. Or is it because of the commitment or understanding of that? Because that, I think that for me is an important question. Then in the presentation I pick up that something went wrong, and that's something that went wrong in terms of the approach, with good approach in terms of primary health care, including infrastructure development. In that process, lack of management ended up with a product that is now concentrated and not necessarily achieving what the strategy was seeking to achieve. So that is now being corrected. Now, and I think it's a good thing, but aren't you going to end up with some of unutilized infrastructure elsewhere in terms of the, because the resource that you, the resource base is going to shrink as you roll out broader footprint in terms of the access area. It may affect the concentrated area, or that's really been taken into account. I'd like to hear that kind of response in terms of that. But I think in all fairness, Chair, I find that we are convinced, I'm convinced that we hear what the department is saying. I'm hearing very clearly what the DG is saying. I had a lot of questions that I was prepared to ask, but those questions somehow where the presentation has been managed downwards in terms of how do we then move forward from here. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Makalana. Any other comments? Mamsa.
Thank you, Chair.
I think that you will need some panado from the health department.
I need more than panado. thank you, Chair, and must also thank the DG for the informative presentation, even though I was late. There is only one aspect that I'm interested in. Bear with me if you discussed it last time because I was not here. I'm more interested in these school mobile clinics. As to where they are around the country, if you have residing in the Western Cape, and my constituencies in the Western Cape, in Langa, I've got a lot of sheds there. So where are they and how do you access them? I just want to, I hope my colleagues did not. I want to book one. The ones that are being manufactured must go to Langa. They won't ask. It's only me who will ask them. That's the question, madam. And what is that you are providing in those mobile clinics at the schools?
Thank you, in No, no.
Thank you very much. Maybe to add on what the colleagues have asked DG, I think the time that Honorable Matagan is referring to, that you were last with us, I think the audit of the facilities was not yet complete, but I think you were almost there the last time. Now, with the allocation now that you have received, is it based on those on the results of the of the audit? And also, if it is is based on the audit, maybe now, I'm sure you're doing a lot of work. You have established your own, what you call, infrastructure office with Dr. Shaga there. But now, how can we see improvement in the expenditure now moving forward? And clearly, that's one, but also we can't help looking there. I live in Gauteng, next to a hospital that has been built, I think it's 5 years now, and I pay a lot of attention, you know, to that hospital, and they promised now in March, the last count last year, we're informed that now in March the facility now would be open. Now, it's been postponed now, I think, to August, September, I'm not sure. But clearly, I'm not sure as to what the problem is. The Zola Hospital in Soweto, understand that at least I understand that there is an improvement that side. What is it? I know that again the provinces are responsible, but is there an intervention from national to ensure that at least there is acceleration? Because I mean, if these facilities are allowed to take this long, clearly, at the end of the day, you'll find that they have almost doubled the price that was quoted at the beginning because of the length of time that is being taken. I don't know. I know that I've asked specific questions. You may not have those specific answers, but would really like to see. I don't know how soon facilities could be finished. There might be others in the country which have dragged that long, you know. But I don't know if, for instance, the contractors do pay penalties if they are responsible for taking a lot of time. I mean, more time than at the time was required. That's one question. But also, I mean, for me, I'm really concerned about the slow spending. I don't know, in terms of coordination, you know, that if we can see improvement going forward. And health is health. It's not infrastructure or public works, certainly. I don't know how you can you're going to improve the question of concurrent functions, the impediments of the of concurrent functions. I hope that now the Health Act is an act now, if I'm correct now, and I don't know if it is going to assist. Maybe the question that Honourable Matagana was raising, if it is really going to assist in ensuring that there's more coordination and yes, thank you, teacher.
Thank you.
You want to come back? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to perhaps start with your comments and go back to my presentation again to say, Chair, we are changing the model.
Mm.
We're not approaching this in an interventionist approach. It's a wrong approach. You can't deliver health in an interventionist way. It doesn't work.
Mm.
We need integrated planning that brings all partners on board. This is what I was trying to say, Chair. Because in an integrated manner, if a tap doesn't work, you don't have to go. Hence I say, a ceiling is collapsing. Somebody must just get a screwdriver and fix it. Now you wait for 3 months for public works, for something that you can... So what we are doing, I think there's a fundamental problem where we've taken the ability of our people to solve problems. We've seen it. Let me cite examples. In one province, when we went to a district, because we've set up chair what we called facility improvement teams. We did the audit, we set up the teams, facility improvement teams. It's a team of 10 each. We said to the teams, when you go to a district to fix the problems, don't go there and try and fix the problems with the health workers only in that facility. Partner with communities who are the users of services. Partner with other players. Partner with local government. Partner with any other partner. So in one province, I just want to use an example. What they did, they got local government. They got the private sector. Now they needed something to be built. The private sector funded that it was built quickly. They had toilets that were leaking sewage. They were fixed overnight. The showers, the patient showers, Chair, were used as storage. Okay? So now tell me, do you need public works to move things from the shower? And what intervention do you need there, Chair, really? Now, you need problem solving, not intervention, problem solving. You empower South Africans to solve problems. Now, if you say intervention, it means they must wait for you to come from wherever to do something. It can't be, Chair. It cannot be. Now, I'm appealing, Chair, please, let's move away from this culture of intervention and empower our people to solve problems. I think that's the principle. So I want to go back to the undergraduates. What we have done, because it's three categories of what I call former unemployed graduates and diplomats, because some of them have diplomas. We train them, we call Palama to train them, to teach them about how government works, public finance management act, public service act, and so on. Those who do HR must know what is expected of them, those who do finance and so on. And then we deploy them to different provinces. But then what we're going to do, because their contract was for a year, we're bringing them now for retraining to prepare them for absorption. Because now you are preparing them to be taken into specific posts where they're going to perform. The HR, because we are changing the HR approach. Chair, if you look at our human resource for health strategy that we launched in 2011, in that strategy, it has 8 themes. One of the themes is about norms and standards. We say, because we've done this exercise and we're busy, we're going to roll it out from the 1st of April. If you go to a clinic, at least you must know what the norm is for a clinic. A nurse versus a staff nurse, how many staff nurses do you need relative to your professional nurse? Now, professional nurse is your sisters with bars. If you look at the data, from our institutions, you'll realize that we've got more professional nurses than we have staff nurses. Now, professional nurses are your commanders. So it means we've got more commanders than soldiers. So we say the ratio, the proportion is a problem. Proportion of your staff nurses to your professional nurses. So what the interns are going to do is that from now onwards, we're going to get them to roll out the norms. Meaning if in one facility you've got a concentration of staff and in another facility you don't have staff, the province must start reallocating. Because what people tend to do, they appoint people where they want to work, not where the services are needed. So we want the provinces to be held to comply with the norms in terms of the National Health Act. But again, you don't say you must comply. We say we're going to work with you to make sure that there's general compliance with building capacity to move towards compliance. So I'm trying to explain here so that you know that in terms of the intents for HR, that's what we do. There's a Wizen tool that we're using. We've trained people in provinces who'll be training interns to implement. The second area is about finance. I've already said in three facilities. One facility, they've been unable to collect revenue was 215 over a three-year period. When we put them in there, they were able to, over a five-month period, they were able to collect revenue of 35 million. So what we are saying is that if there's that ability, now this is revenue from medical aid, and you know if you don't collect money from medical aid, it will be prescribed. So it's revenue that's lost. So we are saying, no, this is a resource that the province must have. So we are putting systems, so these IT people will be located there together with the finance to ensure that the systems that have been implemented can happen. So in that respect, we'll be absorbing those interns specifically to do it. It's going to be their daily functions. But we retrain those that are already in the system so that we can improve services. Well, we are looking at the filing systems. Now, the filing systems, every time we talk about filing systems, people think computers, electronic, even the basic filing, record management, which is required in terms of our archiving act and so on. We must just get it right. I mean, we just did the exercise now, and it's clear that those kind of things are needed, and we have data capturers. So what we've done in three hospitals will expand it to the rest of the other tertiary hospitals. So we'll do in central and tertiary hospitals, and then maybe in outer years, we'll then move to regional, depending on the capacity. So these intents will always be needed. So when you say treasury on board, let me explain our relationship with treasury. It's different units in treasury that we work with. We work with TAU. TAU is Treasury's Technical Assistance Unit. What TAU does, they work with us to say, these are the prescripts, and they go and train. Like, for instance, if there are audits, we work with TAU to improve audits. So there's a unit in Treasury. We have an MOU, actually, and Mr. Van der Meulen will explain. We also have a team in Treasury. I think it's led by Andrew. That is supposed to be working on the NHI costing. So they're busy with the costing exercise at the moment. Now, the two departments must see, because the question that was asked by the public and yourself here is whether will it be affordable. So that costing exercise check is underway. So I'm just showing you the different streams of work relative to treasury. But I was raising a totally different issue here about treasury and allocation to say when allocations are done in provinces, the provincial treasury must not just look at what is requested, and they just say, okay, we'll give you so much. It must be on the basis of data, which is what we say would like to be considered. That was the principle that I was trying to express. The hospital reside, I think Mr. Dinan Pafudi will give us an indication as to where we are. But I wanted to raise a question here. I've always asked the question, do we really need 3 grants? Do we need 3 grants? The reason I ask, we saw with the nursing grant, what provinces do, they spend, they've got a nursing grant. They don't spend it, they use the equitable share money instead of using the nursing grant. So the question is why? Because you see, in the grant, we set conditions. Maybe they don't like those conditions. They then opt for using equitable share because they can, I don't know, I don't have the answers, and I don't want to speculate. So the reason we're saying all the three grants must be integrated is so that you just have one infrastructure grant, and then you don't have to get people generalizing, because this is what they do. I'm not an accountant, Chair, but I don't know. You can tell me whether it's good accounting practice or not, where you spend here and then you shift funds here. So I don't know. I think it's just to introduce good practices, whether accounting or any other practice. I think it's a principle, and it's just an appeal. And I think this is what we're trying to discuss. Mr. Kenneth Brown, ne, has been working with us also, helping us to see that this happens. He's been quite helpful, I must say. Even in the Limpopo intervention, we sit down with him, we say, Kenneth, look at the data, this is the story. And then he'll say, you know, DG, this makes sense. Let's sit down and look at it. So we do have partnership, but I'm just saying that partnership must also translate in provincial treasuries so that there's harmony. I'm saying we translate the practice here further down to provincial treasuries. That's what I was trying to say, Chair. Chair, the provinces, the joint planning, it's a new approach. What we have tried to do, we've taken all of this data and we said to the heads of departments, this is your provincial data. Use it for planning purposes. And then what we do in NHC, this presentation that you have here, it's presentation that gets discussed by the MECs and the HODs in our NHC. And they then use it, okay, as a basis. But we say we don't want to just give the HOD. How many people have you trained to use NED? So we've trained a total of 126 people to, when we roll out the system in the province, of course we've rolled out the system to the HOD's offices. They must have their people who work with them on a regular basis to interrogate the data, to see whether their planning is good or not. So this is the beginning of a phase where we talk about integrated planning in partnership. And we also want to ensure that when it's agreed on policy, when it's rolled out and it's implemented, we move jointly and we deal with the concurrency in function. The spending share, because this is the beginning of a phase, is what we are going to improve and we use later. And we are in partnership with other government departments. For instance, I must apologize, actually, I should have done this, and I beg your pardon. The school health, it's partnership with basic education. So what we have a standing planning team with basic education. So when we did the mobile, basic education had to say to us, we have to agree on the hours, you can't interrupt and disrupt the schooling and learning and teaching. So we have to say, okay, which are the appropriate hours for the mobiles to visit the school so that it's not disruptive? But they've come up with another brilliant idea here to say it should actually not just be during school holidays, because what it means is that if you just link it to a school only, it means when the school closes, the mobiles are parked. They said we should also make sure that during school holidays, ordinary members of the public can access the services. Honorable members, that is the plan. And I thought I should show you what one mobile looks like. So I can show you each of the three as to what this one is for the dentist, for the dental services. There's one for ophthalmic services and there's a general one. So the idea is that when the schools are closed, the mobiles can be used for ordinary members of the services. So we start with the schools, but we also plan for other services. Chair, the donor, what I was trying to express is that, and I want to use the example of Limpopo. In Limpopo, as part of the administration, you probably saw in the news that there were patients who did not have access to warm water and so on. So we went to investigate in each hospital what was the problem. Chair, it turns out that the boilers had not been maintained, I don't know for how long, number one. Number two, we picked up that they had bought x-rays. You see that chair is covered. The x-rays that were covered like that. Never used, bought, but never used. So we've gone out to look at every single problem. Now, because they had not targeted. Now, when your boilers don't work, it's a serious problem. It means cooking is affected. Your infection control is at risk. Patients can't have access to warm water. I mean, it's a big problem. So, because boilers have not been maintained, it has affected the steam. It has had repercussions. So we went there, and then look at what is it that is at risk. We said infection control. It's a quality, serious quality issue, and we use that. In partnership with the EU, we wrote them and discussed with them that we'd like to buy the X-ray and the autoclaves and the boilers for the province. So we've gone ahead. Ordinarily, this is what infrastructure funds should have been used for, but that's not what the province is planned for. So it's that, but we say, now, because we've learned from this experience, we're going to go back to every single province and look at the status of their boilers, their autoclaves, so that we don't get these surprises down the line. But they plan for each one of them on maintenance. This is why I was saying, Chair, if you don't maintain, then you have to replace everything at huge cost. We've seen with this exercise that this is the case. So we were lucky because the EU said the funding that they're giving us is what they call budget support. They say, we give you money as long as it's to improve quality, to improve maternal health, but you use it as you see fit. We say, okay, a responsible approach, and we want to thank Treasury for that, because they said, if you just say budget support, use it for anything, it becomes a little bit chaotic. You must have business plans. We said, that's a brilliant idea. So we fought in the initially. We said, you know, this is too much, but it was a good approach. I must applaud them. So we came up with a business plan. So it's good because then you can see that this is for quality, and this is how it has been spent, and in this area. So we have purchased those autoclaves, and then the boilers will be fixed and so on. But we're saying as we move, we have to. Every province must tell us about the status of their boilers so that it's not a surprise. The approach on primary health care and the risk, meaning if we extend access, these existing services. Honourable Member, before you came, I was showing the utilisation rates of some of our facilities. And this we do. We calculate according to patient encounters how many times the people utilize a service. And it's clear that some services are more utilized than others. And sometimes it's because people come from outlying areas. One, because there are no doctors in particular facilities, so they prefer to go to facilities where there are doctors. So we're saying, let's move services closer to where people are. And we don't anticipate that there will be that risk of underutilization. In fact, the risk that we have at the moment, especially in one province, Eastern Cape, we have a lot. Eastern Cape in the whole country is the one with the most facilities, lots of clinics. If we can show you the picture here of Eastern Cape, you'll see they've got lots of clinics, but some of them are not used. And you know why? Because they've not been properly commissioned. Maybe they don't have enough staff or equipment and so on. What That's why I said this presentation chair can take the whole day. So what we've done for every facility, we started with the NHI, is to say we have an essential equipment list. Now, do a checklist and tell us, of these facilities, how many have equipment and how many don't. And then go and purchase the equipment. So we've done that for each one. But we want them to redirect the funds for that purpose. Chair, you're saying, you made a statement about the spending patterns. I would like to caution, it's not just about spending, it's quality of spending. We saw in some provinces, if you look at their graph, they spend well, they're at 98%. But when you interrogate what they spent, it was because of overinflated prices. So we are interrogating also the quality of spending. Chair, the school mobile clinics in you are saying in this province where parliament is. Yes. Chair, the first set has been sent to Eden. Now the subsequent sets, Chair, maybe we should leave it to the province to discuss with you where it will be allocated. It's at Eden district, but there will be six more that will be, so there's another member who has benefited, Chair. So we have,
I'm afraid to that we will all benefit.
So there are six more mobiles that will be sent. Chair, Treasury data and ours. Like I said, for purposes of planning, what we'll do, we'll just invite Mr. Blecher to our meeting, because I was not in the previous meeting, because the issue was just on the basis of his comments, I think, that I think we'll just invite him so that he can see the planning data that we have relative to information, because I know that they look at
that on Tuesday, which linked with our presentation in relation to the division of revenue of the 22nd February.
The one on the division, this is why I say we were working with Mr. Brown. He was helping us in doing that. Yes, thank you very much. Chair, the facilities audit, we had said in the past that we will present, we've taken the facility audit data. And then in the facility audit data, the interesting thing here, if you go to a clinic, ne, in some of the facilities, let me use an example of Zululand, for instance. One facility was in a place where if it rains, people actually get literally wet. One, the facility is small. Two, the cover for them, it's inadequate. So what we did, we went to say we'll erect the... what is it, the park home, and do that. In another, in Vembe district, for instance, they didn't have a place for medicine. We erected a park home for dispensary. So those are kind of responses, but we plan it with the provinces. But that we're doing using our own funding to facilitate, you know, this, to alleviate. But we are saying this time around, when they allocate, we show them the data, they have the data actually, they look and they say to us how they're going to repair and fix the problem. Chair, Zola Hospital, maybe you need to be aware, as part of the program that you have been jointly involved with the provinces, it's the employment of CEOs. So we've interviewed jointly with the provinces for appointment of CEOs, and Zola, I think Zola, they will be appointing a CEO soon, they will be commissioning teams and so on. But I also think that we have to perhaps engage the executive. Now, it's starting now. The minister has taken the audit data, all of this, he's presenting in Mpumalanga, ne, to the provincial legislature and the executive, to say here's the data, and this is how your province look like. You don't have clinics here, you have clinics here. Decide how you support your MEC to do his or her work. So that work has just begun, and the minister is going to do precisely that. And he will be doing that in all the provinces to start using this data to discuss with the executive and legislature. And that is the approach, Chair. And finally, the National Health Act came into force in its entirety last year, March, in 2011, except for the section that is being amended to introduce the Office of Health Standard Compliance that will be inspecting facilities for quality standards. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. You want to make a follow-up?
Yeah. Are you saying, DG, that the province is responsible for identifying the areas to allocate the mob? So it's a province. So we are in trouble.
Can I just say, Honourable Member, if it's the province, we are using this data for them to justify. Because you see, if you say you have a significant proportion of quintal 1 and 2 schools in area A, and then the mobiles then are sent to area B, which has quintal 3 and 4, then we will ask the question, why that allocation? Why don't you send to? Because we are using quintal 1 and 2 as a basis for allocation of the mobiles. This is where you have the big. Because remember, with the schools, they don't fit the nodal arrangement. It's about the children who come from poorer schools. So we are targeting those schools, not necessarily the district. So we'll get into those discussions, Honourable Member.
Chair, just to follow up a small one. Just a small follow up. The cost of this mobile clinic, what is it? What is its cost? And just so you mentioned that 60 is on order or is in process. What informed the distribution? What's the distribution criteria? Is it quintal 1 and 2? If that's the case, is it taking into account of the existing data in the provinces and non-provinces that informs the spread of this 90?
Chair, the cost is about 2 million per mobile. That's the estimate, because for the first 30, we paid 34 million. So it's about 1.2 million, isn't it? 1.2, about. My arithmetic is not so good. It's 30, for the 30, we spent 34 million. So I'll ask accountants to help me calculate. So the allocation, remember this, we said we'll start in the NHI pilots. But then as we expand beyond, we want to go, because there are a lot of mobile services. We can show you where the provinces have mobile services. We're not having the mobiles only, Chair. We're also looking at the existing facilities to check whether these things can be made available. The reason I was showing you the access, quintal 1 and quintal 2, how close are they to a facility? Because if they're close to a facility, they should be able to access the services. If they're not, then we should utilize the mobiles as an option. But we look further to say, on a long-term basis, what are the other options that are available? So for the remaining 60, it will still be for the NHI pilot district. But maybe it is in those discussions that you have to check whether, if there's over-concentration, can we expand beyond the NHI pilot? Maybe we get into those discussions then. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Donaldson. Well, Mr. Kaburi.
Okay, thanks, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks, Honorable Member. I'm going to only to address two questions. One is for expenditure, and the other one is relating the delays in terms of the most of the housing hospital project. Maybe if I can start with the delays. The Zola Hospital, this is already indicated that we are busy in terms of commissioning the hospital. And since that, honorable members will know that hospital is a new hospital, then it was not having any staff. Then the process of appointing the staff for that hospital is in progress. Then in terms of the infrastructure, all the things that we have spending, especially on the level where equipment were not fitting, on the theaters, and also on the windows that we installed on theaters unnecessary, all those areas were addressed. And then there are other areas of concern that they are not that big problem. We're going to address those areas after the opening of the facilities. For example, the location of the mortuary in relation to the main hospital. There's a distance that we have to put a walkway. Those areas we're going to address them immediately after the hospital is open. It's all our hospital. The Natal Spirit Hospital, the only challenge that we have now is the contractor used the wrong doors on the theaters, and we realize that when we procure the equipment now, some of the equipment are not going to fit, then we have to start addressing those issues, and I think this was just addressed on the last week meeting, and then the contractor is coming back to fix those doors, but the equipment is already procured. That's why when the service provider wanted to come install, they realized that when they remeasure, they cannot be able to fit the equipment. I think that's the only problem in Natal Spirit. If maybe I can just move to the grant expenditure. We are going to a little bit experience under expenditure, but it's not going to be that much as compared to the previous financial year. But the driver of this under spending is the provincial rollovers. The decision of provincial rollovers is taken very late. For example, we agreed with the National Department Treasurer that...
I want you to note that Mr. Donaldson, I know he's talking about the provinces, he's not talking about national, but I just want you to note that because I would want you to comment.
Yes, then we agreed, I think 3 years back, with National Treasurer that the role of us supposed to be, decision is supposed to be taken on the first quarter of the financial year, of which nationally is has done and is happening. Then we know about the decision on the first quarter of the financial year. Then the only challenge that we're still sitting with now is the provincial one, because they know about the decision of the rollover very late. The other thing is that we only have three provinces that we are concerning about. It's the Free State, is Gauteng, and Mpumalanga. The other ones, even if we're going to have an expenditure, is going to go to the level of maybe 95 to 98%. But why Free State is just Free State is performing very well. We are sitting now with the invoices amount of plus or minus 200 million that we cannot pay because of the moratorium, and that infrastructure is not supposed to process any invoices. And then that's there's a moratorium that put by the Treasury Free State that all invoices on infrastructure from health, they're not going to be processed because they're having financial challenges there. Then that's the area that needs the high-level intervention, and we already raised it, and I think maybe it's going to be addressed because we also reported it on the HODs of the province. Then how... when the message came, it came through National Treasury. There was a meeting in National Treasury where the provincial treasury indicated that they're going to apply that. Then I think we need that intervention from my level. Then housing, the challenges that we're going to have in housing, the allocation, I think most of the projects that were under construction, they're finishing. And then the province allocated a lot of money on a new project. That's what Digit was referring to, especially on the issue of the when they allocate projects, they're not looking at the quick wins. Because if we look at that, we're going to address a lot of, we're going to spend a lot of money from this grant. A lot of quick wins from the province, they put them under equitable share. And once they have the challenges under equitable share, they are requesting to do the journals to move the expenditure to revitalization. That is one of the areas in terms of the challenges that we said it's better for us to merge the grant, and the province they have to start addressing those, all those infrastructure issues on the conditional grant than equitable share. Then we are addressing the issue of the planning, and then I think it's under control. It's just that the impact that we are going to understand, and under expenditure is how things are going to be huge, because it's going to be plus or minus 200 million. Mpumalanga, I think we are experiencing a lot of low progress in terms of the contractors, especially on Dr. Ferreira Hospital, where there's a lack of supervision, and also the procurement of some of the equipment was delayed. But in terms of the procurement, it's just unfortunate that we cannot push procurement when the facilities are not ready. Then we are we appointed the team that's working with the provincial team, especially on the level of the implementing agent. Then I think that team is progressing very well. The only challenge that we are experiencing now is that sometimes the implementing agent, they feel like we are monitoring them, whereas they are not under our appointment. That is some of the challenges that we are coming across, but we're on the level that we can able to manage those challenges. I think the major thing, I think as I indicated, is that we need assistance in terms of the decision on the rollover issues, because really it's having a lot of impact when it comes to the 12, because most of the decisions are taken in December, and we're left with only 3 months to spend the amount that is going to be given to us.
Just maybe just to be helped to understand this. In Free State, there is a moratorium declared by the provincial treasury that they shouldn't spend this money because of the budgetary problem. Now I don't understand. Aren't we talking about some grants here? Why is it that the grant that was intended for a particular purpose get entangled with the inability to manage the provincial budget, and therefore it becomes a diversion of. Now, I think we need to get some assistance also from Treasury, because I do not understand this condition of and the carrier of the bad news becomes the treasurer to say the treasurer of Free State has now declared this moratorium, and they can't tell them that you're out of order, this you can't do. And I'm worried about that, because I just want to get clarity. Because, I mean, the provinces, they get all their budgets, and why should it be the case, and why did the treasurer agree, if the treasurer agree? Because surely this should not be allowed to happen.
CFO would like to respond.
You'd like to respond, sir? Oh, I wanted to save you, you know. Because you will respond, the CFO is fine. But I just want to remind honored members that during the presentation of the criminal prevention, this was mentioned. But maybe Mr. Donaldson will also want to call the head on that. CFO?
Thanks. That's much of my saving, is that we've had roundabouts with all the provinces as well. And the one thing in Free State, it seems to be a cash flow issue, so that you know, in other provinces, to some extent, they ring-fence the grant money going from Treasury going to the department. In Free State, that ring fencing seems not to have happened. So when the money went to the province, they used it not for the intended purpose. So they've got like 200 million rands worth of commitments that they can pay,
they haven't got the cash, and therefore the moratorium came, and it's now a rolling, issue. That's a sad one for Free State, actually.
Now,
Mr.
Donaldson,
I think you will comment on this one and the other issues that you would like to comment on.
Thank you. I don't have anything to comment on generally. It's very welcome and very detailed accounts of the new approach and planning instruments that the National Department and the DG has outlined. The issues that have been raised in relation to rollovers and spending contracts in the current financial year are issues that need to be taken up with the Provincial Treasury. There is no such thing as a moratorium on spending. So I think we need to be careful about language. Treasuries, of course, do from time to time intervene if there are concerns about the veracity of particular contracts, or if there are concerns about whether the budget for the year has been used up or not. But there is no such thing as a moratorium on infrastructure spending. So.
But then I'm saying on Tuesday, was it on Tuesday when Treasury, or Wednesday, when Treasury presented, no? It was on Wednesday, it was mentioned that there are challenges in Free State. It's not that I'm not hearing for the first time from her. Generally, in the Treasury of Free State, there are challenges. And we even said in the meeting that, by the way, we need to get a report on the status of provinces, of provincial treasuries, generally, because the report is saying, so Free State might be the worst case, but they're not the only ones. The Limpopo is under administration, the treasury. So I think that there are challenges. Well, if moratorium might be the wrong word, but what is saying that they are not paid, that's all.
We're very aware there are challenges in several provinces, and we are involved in dealing, in case of one or two provinces, through specific intervention teams, with the difficulties in provincial treasuries. But Wendy Fano can elaborate on that if you would like. There is a very substantial engagement with provincial treasuries around improving, particularly infrastructure management, and ensuring that spending is in line with budgets. And that contracts are more efficiently implemented.
I don't know if other members understand you, Mr. Donald, because Mr. Ramasarana's question, I think, is a very straightforward question. He's saying the National Department allocates a conditional grant. Our limited understanding of a conditional grant is that those resources are meant for that specific case. And therefore, we're not expecting that there would be challenges. Now we're talking specifically with Free State rather than generalizing. So all we're saying that is that your own understanding as well.
Of course, that's correct. A conditional grant. There's several categories of conditional grants. Some conditional grants go into general revenue, but the conditional grants that are for specific purposes are available only for those purposes. That's completely correct.
I'm happy to hear that. But the question I was asking, why is the treasurer did not intervene to correct the situation in Free State. In this particular course, the discussion here is about conditional grant.
And just to add on what Honorable Matlakane is saying, is that the President has, I think from his last state of the nation address, that is 2012, this year as well, he keeps on harping on this issue of a 30-day, what you call it, sticking to the 30-day payment. He said the other day we were supposed to receive a presentation, but it was postponed because this has implication now on that 30-day, what you call it, payment arrangement.
Anything else, Ms. Fanner, just to comment? So.
If I can ask the committee's indulgence, please, because we are aware of the situation and we are looking at the issue. If I can ask that we, say, early next week, submit a detailed report on what exactly is happening in Free State and also what interventions are in place, because we are aware of it and we are dealing with the issue.
I just saying early next week, Monday, you'll be briefing the committee. You'll be finalizing what is happening Monday, early Monday next week.
So it's submit a written report that can then be circulated to committee members that actually indicates what the exact problems are and what is being done with regard to Free State.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Tichi, have you got your closing last comment?
Just before I welcome what the lady is saying to give us the report, but it would be good if they bring the report so that we can discuss the report with them.
Well, maybe we can see whether, I think we need to decide whether we want to handle specifically talking quickly, but generally I think it will be important for us to understand the status of the provincial treasuries, because it looks like there are challenges in general. I think that's what Mr. Donaldson was saying as well. But we can decide if we want the Free State one that we have heard about, because we don't want those SMEs to be on the receiving end. You know, we must know and see again how can we... you don't want the word the interview, did you? How can we work together on that to resolve the issue? Well, it does not become just a Free State, what you call it, because it affects a number of people. Okay, thank you very much.
No, Chair, I was just saying, when we do that with Treasury, can you just include entry so that it should not be a duplication? Because they are in charge of those. Thank you.
As well said, teacher.
Thank you, honourable members, for inviting us. I must apologise up front. I've been rude not to introduce the team. Maybe in closing, I can just so that you know who are all these people, and I apologise for that. I should have done it in advance. I've got Miss Sonia Fenter, who's our IT guru. And she's the one who's going to train our graduates on the use of the system. Our CFO, Mr. Moremi, no, he's not Mr. Moremi. Our CFO, Mr. Sandemeve Moremi, who's presented the last time at NHL, Mr. Ndina Mbavudi, who's responsible for infrastructure. Chair, when we come again, we want to share some concepts that we're busy with Mr. Brin. I don't want to disclose this yet because we haven't finalized the agreement. It's an innovative approach on how we can solve this problem quicker. But once we finalize that, we'll come and present to you. At the back we have Mr. Siabonga, who's responsible for Chikwana, Mr. Siabonga Chikwana. He's the one who goes from province to province to check how they spend. But what has changed this time around is that it's him, the grant managers, and the CFO. They visit, they sit, they discuss, and so we've changed even the approach of monitoring from a CFO level and to others. And Mr. Vishal, who's in my office, who's working with the team and our parliamentary deputy parliamentary officer, whom you know very well. Thank you very much. Yes, he's with the minister in Mpumalanga addressing the executive. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, FPG. I remember Mr. Mtapudi, we met in some local meeting. Trying to address these issues of hospitals that facilities that really don't come to an end. Just on the lighter side, TG, on the, I thought the members would raise something, because you talked about the PAC nurse, and then I was worried that we also would want some ANC nurses as well.
ANC, antenatal care.
Oh, okay. Oh, no, we covered TG. Fine. Well, TG, thank you very much for the presentation, and the members have already indicated that your presentation and the minister are always very frank, what you call a presentation that are normally well received by the committee. I think that also you will convey our gratitude to the minister for allowing you a short notice to come and present, but also to say that maybe we will just need to find time to clarify. I don't know the message that you received around what Mr. MacPherson said, but I know that he was responding to a question that I asked to clarify. But we can deal with that later. I think that PG as a committee that is concerned